Welcome to the inaugural podcast of Prime Flicks, the 15-minute film discussion podcast. I'm your host, Ed. Here on Prime Flicks, we pick a film, watch it, and discuss it. I came up with the idea of Prime Flicks when I realized that the friends that I was most likely to discuss films with are spread all around the country, and the friends that I live closest to don't share my taste in film. So you can use this podcast however you like. You can use it as a primer to the chosen film, that is, if you don't mind spoilers, or if you're British, a primer. Or if you're like me and you have trouble finding people with similar tastes, you can kind of use it as a substitute for the usual lobby talk that you usually have after you see a movie with friends. So the film choices aren't too restricted, but we do have a couple loosely defined rules. The first is that the film must be currently available on either Netflix streaming and/or Amazon Prime. The second is that the guest for the week and myself have both never seen the film prior to this one viewing that we're going to right before the podcast. And the reason that we do that is just to try to get a fresh view, a fresh take on the movie. So we haven't seen it 100 times and it's not, you know, burned into our brains. Prime Flicks is an affiliate podcast of the website Stuff Smart People Like. So if you like what you hear here, you can get more of that on our weekly podcast there. It's a little more general, kind of talking about politics, entertainment, the arts, science, basically whatever we feel about talking about. It features many of the same people you hear here on Prime Flicks, including myself and my guest for the day. Speaking of my guest for the day, my guest this week is Jordan. Jordan and I go way back, having worked together in the same research lab in college. So it's been a little while for both of us. Say hello to the people, Jordan.
Assalamu alaikum. How's it going, people?
Sorry. It's okay. Our film for this week was The Hunter. The Hunter had a limited release in 2011. Stars Willem Dafoe as a man sent to kill the last Tasmanian tiger. It has a rating of 6.8 on IMDb, 69% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 63 out of 100 on Metacritic. So just to right out of the gate here, Jordan, what's your overall take on the movie? What did you take away from it?
So in the beginning, just as a small clarification, I think, he was sent to kill it, but I guess more importantly, he was supposed to, like,
gather samples.
A ton of samples, right?
And like, yeah. So, but they wanted him to destroy the animal and return the biological samples to them.
Yes. For like a business, right? It was
yes, Red Leaf.
They wanted the genetic stuff.
Yeah, they wanted something about the toxin that the, or at least it's alluded to in the film, that there's a toxin that the Tasmanian tiger had, and they wanted the genetic rights to that that compound.
My initial impressions of the film. I don't know. I guess I never. I think it was meant to be kind of like this deeper, like, emotional film, but it never hooked me that way. Like, none of the characters, I think, were developed enough that I was, like, that invested in them.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. I looked up a little bit about this film, and when it first came out, I had a ticket to go see a pre-screening of it, but I ended up not being able to go see it. But people were talking about how, you know, Dafoe is such a method actor, and that, you know, and probably one of the best method actors of our generation. Well, not our generation.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah. I mean, you have Daniel Day-Lewis, you have Christian Bale, right? So there, you know, there are others, but, you know, when you think method actor, his name comes up a lot. And they mentioned how he had spent so much time studying trapping and studying all these things and going out and basically learning to live as his character, that you'd expect that to play more of a role in the film. And I didn't really, that didn't help the character development for me whatsoever to watch him set traps or walk around. I mean, I don't think you need too much training to walk with a rifle through the brush.
Yeah, well, I think because there was definitely, I don't know, I think, so there was that, the initial plot line of he's got to go find the Tasmanian tiger.
Yes.
And for people who don't know, the Tasmanian tiger is just, it's something that went extinct back in, I think, the 30s was the last time they had an actual confirmed sighting, and they actually had one in a zoo for a while. But so that's like the initial plot line. And then the secondary plot line is this family that he stays with, right?
But yes,
it's kind of those two plot lines never integrated well.
That's true.
They were just kind of like these separate things, and each, it kind of, neither one was developed because, very well because of the kind of, I think, flawed way in which they tried to integrate them.
Mm-hmm.
It just never worked, in my opinion.
Yeah, your standard storytelling is that you have a conflict that the person mm-hmm. needs to resolve. In this case, it should have been the case that his conflict, you know, the conflict should have been between him trying to, you know, fulfill this goal of getting this tiger and his simultaneous new interest in this family and being part of this family, right? So you're supposed mm-hmm. to get this impression, I guess, from all the time he spends alone in the film that he's a very solitary person and that this might be his first, you know, time he's really connected with someone, you know, humanly, and that he's connected with his family. And the idea, I guess, there would be that somehow this would, you know, I kept expecting her to find out what he was really there for and to at that to cause her to like want him to get out of her house or, you know, some sort of more conflict with that, when it really was just, well, they ended up being a casualty of his quest, right? Just like their mm-hmm. father was a casualty of this whole thing. And obviously, you know, like we said, there's spoilers for, you know, people who have not seen the film, but it just never, you didn't get the feeling, you got a little bit of the feeling, you know, they kind of try to develop his interest in the family and his connection with the children and that sort of thing. But yeah, I don't know. And there was a not so inconspicuous attempt to kind of juxtapose his essence with the tiger, right? That, mm-hmm. you know, he is sort of a dying breed or whatever, and this tiger is also, and you know, there's a lot of allusions in the movie to the similarities between the two, and I think that was what they were trying to give. And it just didn't grab me as much as, you know, other films I could think of that are along this line, that are more exciting, or movies like The Edge with Anthony mm-hmm. Hopkins and Alec Baldwin, or personal favorite from when I was a kid, don't know if it holds up well anymore, The Ghost in the Darkness.
I remember that. I need to rewatch that, but I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, so that's what I was expecting going into this, and then you know, it failed to provide that, and it also failed to provide a good character study, and I think that would be what it was intended to do.
I have a habit of like doing other things while I watch movies, and this one I was actually like focused and trying to
pay attention,
stay with the movie, and I like the whole time I was like struggling not to just like go grab my laptop and do some work while I was watching. It never grabbed me, never got it, and then I just the whole time, like you said, I just like I don't care about these characters. You know, I think this was, I don't want to say it was a weak performance by Willem Dafoe. I think he might have been a victim of the you know, the direction, the screenplay, that it just it. I don't know. You never got to actually see his range. Like, he's a, you know, awesome actor, like you said, a great method actor of our time. But
yeah, no, there wasn't his signature freak out. He always has a freak out in his movies, and he's sort of known for that. You know,
he's very subdued anyway. Maybe a subdued freak out at the end.
But. Yeah, there was the part where he was starting to rub the mud on him and stuff, and I was thinking like, okay, he's going full like.
I know, yeah, but then the next scene, you're like, where's the mud?
Yeah, exactly. So it's not a, I don't know, yeah, it failed for a lot of those reasons.
Yeah, I thought he was just going to go on a berserker rampage at that point, too, and then I'm like, no, but he's just going to sit on the side of a mountain for like 3 days.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I didn't, and there was the other, which you haven't mentioned, there was the other conflict between the loggers in the town and the greenies, right? And he was getting kind of...
Also very poorly developed.
Yeah, yeah. I thought there were so many opportunities to make it much more serious, you know, to make it much, like, you know, I was picturing the Red Leaf guys coming after him and her getting word of it and trying to run out in the woods to find him, right? To try to, like, mm-hmm. warn him that this guy was coming after him, and I don't know. And even, like, the deaths of the mother and the daughter were very anticlimactic in a sense, because you never see that, you know. And I was almost wondering, because you know that Sam Neill's character has a vested interest in this whole scenario, if he was just lying about them being dead and that they were mm-hmm. actually like in a hospital or something, just to get him to go away. The other thing I was going to mention is it just the case that when you have vast expanses of space in a film that you have to have Sam Neill in it? And for some reason, because that was, I had written down as a note, Sam Neill, of course, you know, like, of course they had to have Sam Neill in this movie.
Sam Neill, I think, also had just had a shitty part.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I think
he wasn't actively sabotaging him as much as you'd expect, too. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, no, he's a good actor and doesn't get a lot of work anymore.
Yeah. Well, he's not a he's not a good leading actor, obviously, but he plays some. He's been in some shitty movies. I'll give you that.
Oh, for
but,
sure. Everybody, you know, they got to work.
Yeah, his supporting roles though, he's done some really good stuff. But yeah, I think it just more of like his character too. I'm like, I don't know. It just all around, kind of getting back to that point. Like there was just, I think they tried to develop too many plot lines.
Yeah, rather than just focusing on, you know, one like specific.
Yeah,
I agree. I also was I know there's a lot of baths in this movie. You know, so you see him in the bath, and it's probably like in his contract that he has to like show his weird body like in any film he's in, but you know, they show him.
Although, speaking of that, I'm sorry, I got to break in. If anyone has seen Antichrist, and they now cannot unsee it. That whole thing about his weird body comes in.
Oh, for sure.
So yeah, folks, go see Antichrist, or at least the first 10-15 minutes, and then have fun.
Well, I'd see any movie with him in it. I mean, I'm trying to think of a movie where I haven't seen him with his shirt off at least or more.
Yeah, I'd say even Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's not afraid to go. You know, I'll give him that. He's not afraid of any role. It seems he will take the strangest roles as, you know, a challenge to him. And say what you will about something like Boondock Saints, you know, people have their own issues with that and all that. But, you know, he at least makes for an interesting and entertaining, like, character to watch in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, so, you know, we're getting a little short on time here. But I think overall it wasn't a terrible movie, but I didn't need to see it necessarily. I don't know if that was, seems like that was kind of a similar perspective you had on it.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing. It's like, man, if it's... Yeah, you know, I said if it's on, whatever, I'll watch it once, but it's definitely not something I would have, like, sought out. It's not something I'm going to recommend.
Yeah.
I'm like, meh, okay.
Right. So I guess that's it for our main discussion. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can do so in a number of different ways. You can hit us up on the website. That's primeflix.tumblr.com, at primeflix on Twitter. Our email is primeflix@gmail.com. Or if you want to, you can leave us some audio feedback or maybe an audio review. And if it's good, we might play a segment of it on the podcast. And to do that, you need to call 414-216-FLIX, F-L-I-X. I assume that many of our listeners are heavy streamers and that one film is not going to tide them over until the next episode. So at the end of each podcast, I want to kind of suggest some films for further viewing. And I know, Jordan, I didn't tell you this too far in advance, but this doesn't have to be a film that's necessarily related to the film we just watched. It could just be a film you've seen recently on streaming that you would suggest, or, you know, a classic one you really like. But I'll start first. If you like this film, you know, or you like Defoe in general, and you want another streaming suggestion, a good one is always to go back and watch Platoon, the classic movie Platoon. That's both available on Amazon and also on Netflix streaming. Great film. Defoe does a great job as one of the main protagonists in the film, or antagonists, depending on your perspective. And it really highlights his range as an actor and some, you know, would say his kind of craziness as an actor or whatever. But definitely a superior film in that respect to this one. Jordan, you have any suggestions that you can think of off the top of your head?
Ooh, off the top of my head, I'm kind of just getting into the Prime
library
movies there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just kind of got this somewhat recently, so I might have to hold off until next time.
Okay,
sorry.
That's perfectly fine. Sam Neill has a couple other ones available. Interestingly, both Neill and Defoe were also in the film Daybreakers. So if you want to get more of them together, you can also check out Daybreakers, which is available on Netflix for sure, and maybe available on Prime. I'm not sure. No, I don't think it's available on Prime. Okay, so join us again next week. My co-host will be Dean. We'll be watching the 2008 film Bronson, starring Tom Hardy as one of Britain's most famous prisoners. Happy streaming.